you paddle a boat from the Generette Canal, which you told me you know about, and tied it up in Generette at the old police station, straight across Bartesh, and which right now is out of the banks. You know that.
Right.
They're not out of the banks. They're just creating, coming back to their own banks.
Mm-hmm. Going to the natural.
But I want to know is what they're going to do with 10 feet of silt if that water keeps coming up. Tell me. Get me an engineer to tell me.
You don't have a truck?
I can tell you some other stuff too before this.
Uh-huh.
You might want to listen.
Okay, are we set up?
Would you mind if we just start off by you telling me your name and your date and place of birth?
Marshall Borrell. I was born in Generette, Louisiana. I was not delivered by a doctor. I was delivered by what they call these ladies?
Midwives.
A colored lady. And, you know, born in 1936. I'm now 73 years old.
Okay. And you understand that we're here from LSU and we're recording your story, and we would like to, we're going to type up the notes from it, and we would like to share your story with other people. Is that okay with you if we make printed products or put it on the computer, put it on the internet? We have your permission?
That's okay with me.
Okay.
You're going to get as close to the truth as I can give you.
Well, good.
But I know a few people in the business. I just mentioned Morris Rayfield, and Morris Rayfield was an engineer. I talked to Morris the other day, but he's kind of hard to get back to right now.
Well,
heck, Morris is 90-something,
yeah.
You know, and you can understand that.
Tell us how you grew up in Generette and about
what
commercial fishing in your life with your father.
In Generette, I was a baby. I mean, all I know about Generette in them days is what the people told me. Because I couldn't talk or walk,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So, exactly at what age I did this, I'm not sure, but we lived in New Orleans when Daddy started Anacostia Canal. And I do remember, I was old enough to remember going to, right by the Audubon Park. We were right close there. We'd ride the trolley car every evening to cool off and take a round trip ticket. It cost a nickel. Me and Mama would ride the trolley car to cool off because it's so hot and they didn't have air conditioning in them days. And we'd come back home and Daddy stayed. We ate more bananas than I ever seen in my life because he was right down them docks. And they drop them off, they don't pick that up, and they gather them up for him, and they'd bring them home. Now, how long we stayed there, I have no idea, but when we moved, I know they was talking about moving because of we moved into Centerville, because I was getting ready to go to school. So she had my mother's had some people you kin to, the Idells that come up off my grandma's side was twins, and they took us in at their place. We had a little bit of trailer, and they were school teachers. They was going to put me through first grade. Well, it so happens is I got something right there missing. I don't believe they put me in first grade in Centerville. Because Daddy was transferred to Kaplan. And I went to first grade in Kaplan. And they were still digging the Anacostia Canal and all the tributaries that comes off of it. He was the first man that went under the bridge when they put a plug on Baldwin.
What were your parents?
That was built on the dry line.
What were your parents' names and what year were they born?
Who was that?
Your parents' names and when were they born?
Oh, my dad is, it was Wilson Borrell, and my mother's name was Floridora Broussard. And daddy was born, I think, in 1916, and mama was born in 1917. I'm not positive of that.
And what was your father's profession?
At the time when they got married, he was a fisherman. He drugged crawfish to feed his family at 50 cents a bucket. And that's the tales, I mean, he's told us. And my grandfather was the best bootlegger they had in Louisiana, in this area. And he did not sell that much alcohol. He did not sell it. He traded it. So people would bring him corn, beans, cucumbers, carrots, everything you need to cook with. So he made that money with that in food. I don't think there's nothing wrong with it, really. But I know where the still's at. I still know where it's at. And unless this park that they're building on Lake Force Point tore it out, it's still there. So that foundation is still there.
Did he make a lot? You said he didn't sell
much,
yes. But he made a lot.
Well, naturally, some of them bought it, but I know he made enough money to feed his family with. And when we had, every weekend we was out there, and they fed the kids and everybody over there, they'd cook. My grandma would cook. And we was all together all the time.
Did you come from a big family?
No, I was the only child. My father had some brothers and sisters, stepbrothers and sisters. In them days, the people didn't live quite as long as they do now. And my grandfather was married twice. And the lady that they were first married, the first Borrell, his stepfather, what you call it, but not his, not part us really, his first husband. When Mary Elizabeth Ford died, well, all that property in the graveyard went to them, and Antoine was Borrell. Was her husband. She buried him in the far corner. And then he married my grandmother. After that happened, I think. I mean, I'm not positive about that. After that happened. And Emma Borrell was her name. And she lived till they cut her legs off. Since she was, I got a picture of her in this book.
But you were talking, you said you grew up around family. Did you have a lot of cousins?
Cousins, I got a lot of. All of it, I mean, I got a bunch of cousins. I can't even name them no more. I haven't seen some of them in so many years. I don't know. I don't even know if I'd recognize them.
What kinds of things did you do when you were growing up? What did you guys do for work or for fun? What was life like?
Well, for fun, I used to run lines and buy a fish, and I caught enough money or fish to pay for my going to the movies, going to the ice cream place, and I didn't have to bother nobody for money. I was getting as much money in them days for the few fish I was catching as they pay in today, 25 cents a pound.
What kind of fish did you catch?
Catfish.
Who would buy them from you?
They had three fish markets in Generate. But one of them stayed in there the longest.
So you did trot lines?
Yeah, just fish bush lines.
Bush lines.
What is that? Describe that for me. I haven't heard that.
The what?
Describe a bush line for me. What is that like?
You hang it in a tree or on a pole. Oh, my daddy's, it was Wilson Borrell, and my mother's name was Floridora Broussard. And daddy was born, I think, in 1916, and mama was born in 1917. I'm not positive of that.
And what was your father's profession?
At the time when they got married, he was a fisherman. He drugged crawfish to feed his family at 50 cents a bucket. And that's the tales, I mean, he's told us. And my grandfather was the best bootlegger they had in Louisiana, in this area. And he did not sell that much alcohol. He did not sell it. He traded it. So people would bring him corn, beans, cucumbers, carrots, everything you need to cook with. So he made that money with that in food. I don't think there's nothing wrong with it, really. But I know where the still's at. I still know where it's at. And unless this park that they're building on Lake Force Point throw it out, it's still there. So that foundation is still there.
Did he make a lot? You said he didn't sell
much,
yes. But he made a lot.
Well, naturally, some of them bought it, but I know he made enough money to feed his family with. And when we had every weekend we was out there and they fed the kids and everybody over there, they'd cook. My grandma would cook. And we was all together all the time.
Did you come from a big family?
No, I was the only child. My father had some brothers and sisters, stepbrothers and sisters. In them days, the people didn't live quite as long as they do now. And my grandfather was married twice. And the lady that they were first married, the first Borrell, his stepfather, what you call it, but not really, his first husband. When Mary Elizabeth Ford died, well, all that property in the graveyard went to them, and Antoine was Borrell, was her husband. She buried him in the far corner, and then he married my grandmother. After that happened, I think. I mean, I'm not positive about that. After that happened, and Emma Borrell was her name. And she lived till they cut her legs off. Since she was, I got a picture of her in this book.
But you were talking, you said you grew up around family. Did you have a lot of cousins?
Cousins, I got a lot of. All of it, I mean, I got a bunch of cousins. I can't even name them no more. I haven't seen some of them in so many years. I don't know. I don't even know if I'd recognize them.
What kinds of things did you do when you were growing up? What did you guys do for work or for fun? What was life like?
Well, for fun, I used to run lines and buy a fish, and I caught enough money fish to pay for my going to the movies, going to the ice cream place, and I didn't have to bother nobody for money. I was getting as much money in them days for the few fish I was catching as they paying today. 25 cents a pound.
What kind of fish did you catch?
Catfish.
Who would buy them from you?
They had three fish markets in Generate. But one of them stayed in there the longest.
So you did trot lines?
Yeah, just fish bush lines.
Bush lines.
What is that? Describe that for me. I haven't heard that.
The what?
Describe a bush line for me. What is that like?
You hang it in a tree or on a pole. And when that pole of that tree is moving, you know you got a fish on it. And it's got slack in it to where that fish can't hardly break loose.
What'd you use for bait?
Anything you could find. Worms a lot of times. We used to dig the worms up that big, big worms.
Now, did you run your lines on the bank or did you have a boat?
No, I had a boat.
What kind?
I had a little bitty wooden boat, about 12 foot long.
Okay. At what age did you start doing that?
At what age? 8 or 9. As soon as they let me go by myself.
Okay. Have you been fishing your whole life?
Yes, I've always fished. I didn't get into the quality of fishing like I do to catch what I just showed you in that picture. Until later in life, that's when I started building nets. My daddy built one net, and that's what them pictured. That net, they stole it from me. Somebody stole it. But that net was set in the wrong place. It was set opposite to where them fish should have been. And I just had something in my mind that them fish was going to come swim towards that net because they had a little stream of water coming out the woods. And so I had to get back in that main bar because fish swim against the current. And I caught 22 head in that. That one net.
Did you fish with your father when he went out to go and do that? Did you go with him?
I didn't go very much. They wouldn't let me get in the boat, in the big boat that he had. I fished with him in life after. In fact, when he had his heart attack at 47 years old, I took care of him. I mean, I knew he wanted to get his Social Security, and they wouldn't give it to him. So I took care of him. I took him out there fishing crabs and stuff like that. And that's when we started it off. It started off with fishing crabs in the Atchafalaya Basin. We caught crabs in the Atchafalaya Basin that 5 dozen would weigh 65 pounds. And we had 3 restaurants we was furnishing. And you couldn't bring enough in.
So these were huge crabs. How did you catch them?
On a roller line.
What is a roller line?
I may be wanting to know too much now.
I don't know.
We're just trying to capture some details. These are terms I haven't heard, so I'm curious
I'm just kidding. A roller line is a line. You put your string on a roller, okay, which we'd use these rollers, wooden rollers that the twine comes on. You would use that and you run a shaft through it where it'll turn. And we used curtain hooks. You put your bait every so often with a little bitty line that hanging about that far, about 7 or 8 inches, and we put that curtain hook on there. And I'd go ahead of him, and I'd bait the line, and I had chains on the line for it to drop. And when I'd flag him, I'd drop that line, he'd start running. He'd run in the other boat. And I'd continue baiting that line. That line was, you know where the GA cut's at?
Yeah.
Now we're across the GA cut. And
what'd you bait it with?
Crew boat chute.
Yeah.
Crew boat chute to the other bar.
Okay.
Which is then silted up so bad you can't even get there no more. And we baited with catfish heads. My daddy's uncle, Jesse Higgins, ran a fish dock, and we'd go over there and we'd get the heads. We wanted them sawed off with no fins. And every head had a crab. He put 22 crates in that thing one day when I dropped that last weight. He had 22 crates of crabs in the boat.
What's the biggest crab you've ever seen?
I've seen, they told me they took out some on one of the people I was selling to, and it weighed 20, they weighed 24 pounds, 16 of them.
Big crabs. But these crabs, these were crabs that you caught in the Atchafalaya?
In the Atchafalaya.
Were they all male crabs?
Every one of them was male crabs. I didn't have no females. Then, they stole all my lines. When them people from Catahoula come in there, they put traps, they stole all my lines, but they didn't know where one of them was. And that was during that storm of Hilda. That was the last line we had out. And my daddy went out there in that storm. I knew it was there. I was working in Morgan City at Lake Ballard. I was putting that road in. But I got off. When I got off of work, I got tied up in that hurricane traffic. Well, I stopped in Calumet, and I called daddy on the phone. And I don't know how I got him, but I got him. And anyway, he was there. He says, I got a bunch of crabs. He says, I got all females. Everyone is a female. I said, well, I ain't going to bring that to Lafayette. I said, let me talk to Oscar, see if he'll take them. And I talked to Oscar Lang, a friend of mine. I said, you want them? He said, how long is it going to take you to get back here? I said, 15 minutes to get back after I get over there. I get there first. And I said, I'll bring them to you. I don't know how many crates he had. And I got back over there, the truck waited for me, and they all went to California. I think I had 7 boxes. And I fussed at my daddy for hours, telling, why didn't you go home? You're going to get stopped back here. You're not going to be able to get home. Oh, I'll get there. So he made it, and I lucked out, and I made it. But that old back road was under trees. So all of his uncles and stuff, after that, they called, and they run the fish dock. Well, they took them away from the levee. They wanted them to evacuate. So they left. They come to Generet. They stayed in my daddy's house. I didn't have a roof on mine. But it quit raining, so we still was able to stay in our house.
The storm blew your roof off?
Yeah. But it didn't hurt my daddy's house. We were right close together. And they came, stayed with us. We had everybody there. Then they wanted to go back, and they couldn't. So when they couldn't, I said, well, Daddy, I said, why don't you just let Jesse and them go back in the boat? Let them have the boat. So they took the boat. We put it down right there in my yard, right at the house. And they went down to buy a cash. Because they was going to lose it. It was at that fish dock. They wouldn't have went over there and tended to it. And people in them days couldn't lose nothing. So that's that little story there. But they wouldn't let us out that road. I had a friend of mine call me. Had evacuated Franklin, that same trip, evacuated Franklin, and he called me from up in North Louisiana somewhere, and asked if he could get into Franklin. I said, no, it's under martial law. I said, they're stopping people, they won't let you in there. He said, well, I'm coming anyway. I said, there's no sense in coming. There's no place to stay. But I put them up. I put them up in my house, and I moved to Daddy after the others was gone.
What kind of a price did you get for your crabs in those days?
We got around, I think it was about $1 a pound. It seemed to me, if I remember correctly, I was getting about $63, $64 a box. And I had about 5 dozen in a box. They was big crabs.
Yeah, those are big.
And all those that went to California. But California's got bigger crabs than here and fuller.
How did you, when you fished crabs, that was at a certain time of the year, or you fish crabs all the time?
No, that was as we fished those crabs that we're talking about in, started in September, and it went through October. August or September, and went through October. The females moved in at the last part, and that was in November. But in fact, in that year I'm talking about there, we did quit right after that.
How many years did you use roller lines?
2 years.
2 years. Then what happened after that?
After they stole them all, I didn't make no more. We built a couple of nets. We tried to see if we could catch a few fish. And Daddy, that was his game. Now, he didn't mind building nets. But then they didn't have what we had then. They knitted everything by hand. That's why I can take a ball of line, a needle, and a block, and I can build you a net.
You can.
My son thinks he's a fisherman. He can't even tie a string.
So you made all the nets you used?
Yes, I cut the webbing though.
Okay.
I bought the webbing already made. I dipped it. I cut it out. And in fact, at the end, when I was fishing for myself, it was too slow to do it the long way. So I started figuring a way that I could do it. If it got hit by a boat and cut, I could cut that piece of webbing out and put another piece in, tied to the same hooks.
How long did a net last?
Until somebody stole it or run over it.
So was that?
Until you have a appendicitis attack in the middle of the swamp and can't pick them up no more.
Were there a lot of other people out there fishing in the areas where you went?
There was a lot of guys that was fishing, but I knew all of those. Most of them was from Generette. Carol Gravois bought his boat and his rig. Because Carol caught good fish and everything, I knew that. That's his boat back here that I bought.
So these guys had reputations, some were better fisher than others?
Those fellas were fish, I don't know what they caught, but I know what I caught, and I think I beat them.
What kinds of things were you catching?
Huh?
What kinds of things were you catching in your hoop nets?
Catfish, that's what I was after. I'd pick up a carp or buffalo nine then, but I was fishing catfish. My daddy fished for buffalo and carp. And he's the only man that I know of that ever fished the Lacassine Reserve, that they let him in there. They got him in there purposely. So to take the carp and the buffalo out of there. He wasn't allowed to take any catfish or nothing. He didn't care about the catfish anyway. I mean, he'd take a one or two maybe just for home use. And once in a while, he'd bring in a few sackling for mama. But he didn't extend into anything that would hurt him. And they let him fish the Lacassine Reserve.
What would he do with the carp?
What they did with the carp, at one time, that was the biggest selling fish out there, carp and buffalo. That went to New York. J.P. Talley ran that dock, and he shipped everything north. And the Jews used to use what they call that cheesecake webbing, cheesecloth. And they'd take that and they'd wrap that fish in that and they'd tie it down and they'd put it in a pot of boiling water. And they would boil it. And then they'd take the cheesecloth bag out, throw it away, and make soup. It was in that container, and that's what they would eat. And brother, they eat some pork.
How did they ship out?
I never did it, but they eat it. That's why when they tell you they fixing to have them on the market, they might be good to eat. I got too many good fish to worry about eating a carp.
Did they put them on trains in those days to ship them north?
Yeah, how would they get them to New York?
God knows how they got them there. I'm talking about they had airlines in them days.
What time frame are we talking about? What year, roughly?
You're asking me stuff in there that 70 years ago, 73 years ago. Just about at my age, I was born. I was in the second grade. I mean, that's not a story that I'm telling. Mm-hmm. It's something that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. So locals wouldn't eat the carp, but people in New York wanted them.
Oh, yeah, they wouldn't eat them here. The biggest thing I got was heads, catfish heads. I had some people wanting catfish heads to eat. I was going to throw that away or bring it to bait shop. You know that's the best eating part of a catfish?
The head? Do you eat them?
Sure.
How do you prepare them?
Like a T-bone steak without the bone.
You just cut them open, put them on a... How do you prepare them?
This is going to sound funny, and I'm talking about a big fish. I'm not talking about no small ones. Some of these that you see right here, the heads is gone. You take the head and you go around the eye with a knife, and you cut a circle in the eye all the way around that bone, and you get a piece of meat about that thick and about that big around. And that is the best eating part of that fish.
It's like the jaw meat, huh?
And it don't have a bone in it.
Okay. You fry that?
You do anything you want with it. Broil it, fry it. And when I found out what these people were doing with it, they shouldn't have showed me that. Mm-hmm. That was my specialty. When I wanted to give somebody a specialty, I'd give it to them. Oh. Like my next door neighbor for doing welding for me. I say, I don't want to give you these, Mike, but I'm going to give them to you anyway.
Did you only fish in the Atchafalaya, or did you fish in the marsh also?
Oh, no, I didn't only fish in the Atchafalaya. I got out of there a long time.
Okay.
It was too many small fish. Okay. I mean, I'm talking, you don't believe this maybe, but I put a net in the water. When we first started in there, I put a net in the water trying to catch bait. And I couldn't hardly put it in the boat. I filled the front end of that boat clean to the well. I was standing and fishing a foot deep. Guess how many good fish I took out of that? And as fast as I could throw the others overboard, I don't believe I got killed any of them. I got 13 fish out of that. And that was about 300 pounds of fish.
This is in the Atchafalaya.
Yeah, but they were so small. Now, I've seen people selling this at the docks.
What was your favorite fishing area? The most productive area?
Most productive area is Bayou Sally. That's where the marsh is at.
What size hoop nets did you use? Were they big ones, tall ones?
I'm using 4 foots now. I had 4 foots and I had 2.5s, and 2.5s I almost gave them away. And I had some 3-footers.
How many nets would you have out at a time?
It depends on what condition that I was in. You have to pick them things up and wash them and clean them and re-tar them. And you try to keep enough out that you can put back out. And it's hard to say. I had 200 and something nets, and I lost 110 when I got hurt. I know that. And I had sold a bunch of little ones that I had.
So you would put these nets together at your house with the webbing and...
I spent every Father's Day I believe I ever had with knitting nets.
Did your family work with you with the fishing?
My three girls skinned everything I had to skin. My son skinned a few when he felt like it.
Did they enjoy this?
They got paid money for it. I wasn't their banker, though. My mother was the banker. They must have enjoyed it. They did it. And not to lose fish, I come in one day, it was cold, real cold, and I had the well full, and I couldn't find no ice at that time when I got in. I took a hose and I filled up that well, and I froze that water on them fish. They were still kicking the next day in frozen water. I mean, I couldn't lose that.
Did you eat a lot of fish at home?
Not many. If I could beat somebody out of one.
So they...
I always had fish at home. Always had them.
What's your favorite way to eat it?
Oh, I like it fried, but I'm not supposed to eat it like that. That's my favorite, I mean, fried fish. And you see, there's another thing about fish. When you tend the line and I'm cleaning them, you got a blood streak in fish. If you got a blood streak, you got to cut that out. You might have to take, if you buy a slab of fish, you got a blood streak, it ain't but that thick. You cut that out after it's filleted. Because that gives it a bad taste.
How many different kinds of catfish could you catch out there?
They had blue cats, they had goujons, which is a yellow cat, and they had eel cats. But we didn't pick up as many eel cats as you picked up in the basin. And when they changed to bullheads, they had more bullheads out there. That's a funny thing too, the bullhead catfish, the head swells up, and that happens only at spawning time. That's the male.
Now when you say the bullheads, when the bullheads came, was there a time when there weren't bullheads?
Well, yeah, there was time when they didn't have that head swell up.
Oh, okay.
It's a progression of reproducing.
Yeah.
That's how you want to say it, you know, in reproductions. I saw balls of fish in this thing here that big around. I know this young lady here hadn't seen them. I'm going to show them to her after a while if it stops raining.
What's the biggest fish you ever caught?
65 pounds.
What kind of a fish was
no,
that?
No, not the biggest fish. The garfish I caught was bigger than that. That was 150. And the blue cat I caught, and I caught a goujon the same way.
You hear stories that the big fish don't taste as good as the smaller fish. Is that true?
Not really. Not in a sense, that's not true. You got to know what to do with the big fish. You don't take a thick, thick piece of fish and fry it. If you want to, you butterfly it. If you want to eat your big fish like that. With a small fish, you don't have to butterfly. That's why anything smaller, though, does have a little bit better taste. But I can't find the difference in them.
When you first started commercial fishing, describe your boat. What kind of boat were you using what kind of boat and a motor did you have to get go out there?
Well, what I had was my uncle built me a boat in Orange, Texas. That was another one fishing the Sabine River. And We was looking for a boat. Daddy talked to him and said, well, we'll build you a boat. What you want? And just a small bateau. Okay. Daddy asked him, well, what you want? Oh, you know better than that. He said, if you got some extra crawfish traps over there, you can bring me some of them. I want to fish some crawfish over here. And he built us a cypress hull, all cypress. And we built him 30 crawfish traps. And we made a swap. And Daddy bought a brand new motor. It was a Johnson, I believe.
How many horsepower?
No, it might have been a Mercury. I'm sorry. It was a Mercury. It was a red Mercury. Excuse me. I didn't have so many motors. It was a red Mercury. And it was a 30 horsepower. And I could outrun almost anybody out there with that boat. And I tried it in the waves one time and cracked all the ribs, but I got where I was going. The boat behind me, I don't believe he made it. He wound up in the marsh.
So, what did you use before you had this cypress boat?
That P-ropes. Okay. I mean, we just went on the levee. We seen crawfish on the side of the levee and stuff like that. We fished crabs on the side of the levee with my uncle's stuff. In Sandy Cove, you know where Sandy Cove's at? We had a trot line across Sandy Cove, my uncle did. And we invited the whole family out there. And we ran that line twice and filled up two 55-gallon drums of crabs.
Did you cook them while you were out there?
Well, yeah, we cooked them for all these people we had. I mean, I was a child then, though. I was old enough to do it, but I didn't do that for commercial reasons. We just done that to eat. There was 100 feet of water that end, though. You know what they got now, huh? 30. I still want to know where you're going to put that water at.
So you fished hoop nets. What other kind of fishing did you do? Did you fish crawfish also? Did you fish crabs with traps, any of that?
I fished crabs and I fished crawfish. I fished shrimp. I seen crawfish as well. Fished them with drop nets.
How do you seine for crawfish? Tell me about that. When you would seine for crawfish, how was that done? What would you use and where would you go?
I'd use two big black men.
Okay.
That was my daddy's hands. And they'd pull a seine, except if they saw a snake. I'm guessing at that. It's probably about 25 or 30 foot. And they pull that seine right down the levee. Now, it's a funny thing. We had to go to Coda Homes to catch any crawfish. And as the years went by, them crawfish moved up to Sharonston. But we had to go all the way to Coda Homes to catch them. And Daddy would bring the crew out there to seine them.
How much would you catch?
Oh, they'd catch 8-10 sacks, no problem.
They'd sell them?
Uh-uh.
They eat them?
Everybody ate. Everything was then, we all ate. I didn't have no problem with that. I'd go out there and run crawfish traps. I caught them crawfish that one year when my father-in-law died. And I didn't eat a one of them. I mean, sell a one of them. We all ate them. I'd bring them to my uncle's, and they'd make crawfish bisque and everything. And he was a good cook, excellent cook. He was crippled, but he was a good cook. And we learned, my wife can do it. And we ate our seafood. We lived on it. The selling part was when Daddy was going to the docks with it. So we didn't even eat carp in Buffalo. We call that trash. Back in them days.
What about Gaspagoo? Do you fish for that?
Gaspagoo, no. I didn't fish them, but I didn't throw them away. They would sell at the dock if you went to the dock. You could get rid of Gaspagoo. And some people wanted them. But I never did care for Gaspagoo personally. And
tell us about shrimp.
Shrimping,
how you did that.
I caught many, many, many shrimp. You want to hear the biggest load I caught? I had a 21-foot well craft. And I was at Blue Point. And I was trolling there. My son was ahead of me. He was towards Mud Point. He got on the CB radio and called me. She said, "Daddy, I'm in them shrimp." He said, "Come on over this way." I says, "Okay, well, I just picked up, Ryan. I got to clean these up. I got 3 buckets. That's 5-gallon buckets. I said, "The trough's almost full." I said, "As soon as I get them clean, I'll come over that direction." So I was trolling his direction. And all of a sudden, he calls me again. He said, "I just picked up. I ain't got nothing. I'm out of them." I says, "Okay." So I circled and went back the other direction. And I filled them up. I had all the ice chests in the boat full that I had. 11 chests. I had culled every shrimp, one size to the next. We picked up that, he come to me, and we picked up my trove. Put his boat on, my other boat, I have 2 boats. Put him on the side of me, we both got 8-foot troughs. He got in the boat, start picking it up. He said, "Daddy, you got a log." I said, "You sure?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Give me that net." I picked it up like that, it slid. I said, that ain't no log, Ryan. That's no log." I said, "What I need you to do, I can pick it up like this, but I ain't gonna be able to lift it off the bottom. I know that." I said, "You go in that other boat and you tie it off. Tie off above the bag. Okay? You tied it off, tied it tight." I said, "Now catch me the carp." Threw me the carp, pulled it into the boat. I said, "Come in here now." I said, "Now pull it in." He started pulling it up. I said, "Untie the bag." I said, "Get the net and start dipping." I filled that 8-foot trough completely to the top in my boat. And I never even seen nothing else. Just dipping. Now, we got that. We can't put that in the boat either. So we got to do that with the other trough. That's in his boat. After we got that one out, that trough full, then I picked up the troll. We was able to put the troll in the boat itself and tie it off. I called Generate when I got to the landing. I said, "Y'all come help us. We ain't never gonna get these shrimp out of here." I told Ryan, I said, go to the dock and get rid of them. I said, I can't get rid of the ones we got on ice because we can't handle them. And he went over there and he sold them at the dock. That's when I really knew I was in a mess. I was mad, he got me mad. And I sold them in the dock, and the dock said, "They'll wait for me. They'll wait for us to do it." I called my wife, and her and her mama came out there and helped us pick the shrimp, but I didn't cull them. I didn't grade them out. We had 1,100 pounds at one drag. They gave me a nickel more a pound for the ones that I graded than the ones that I sold like that. I was able to buy a roll of, the only roll that I knew was left. I was told that by a fella that sold webbing of that nylon webbing, but it's made of plastic. You throw it overboard and it floats. People say, well, then you ain't gonna catch nothing. I say, watch, I throw it overboard, drop them two boards. Say, well, the boards are floating too. I say, yeah, I know they are. I say, wait, give me a chance. I drop them boards. When I drop the boards off, I get up there in the front and give it gas. My two boards sink right down to where they go. And you start pulling. Then when you're ready to pick up, when you pick up, your boards come straight up by themselves. You pick the ropes in. All your shrimp is in the back of the in the troll. And they don't get out. And they slide right onto the back. It's amazing to see that webbing work. And that's the troll I used when I went to Grand Isle. The test troll I had made out of that. And I told you that little story the other day. And when I pulled it one way for 15 minutes and pulled it back the other way, the same thing, I caught 3 5-gallon buckets of drag. But I wasn't supposed to pick up none. I went home and built me a set of small boards that I could pick up. I didn't have to worry about picking it up. They floated right to you. You can't pick up something that long, that wide, that thick. I mean, it's the way they're made and the way you tie your chains.
What kind of, when you were out around Bayou Sally in the winter, was there a lot of wildlife back in then?
Days, they had lots of wildlife. You had trappers back there. That's why I had friends of mine that was in the trapping business, which they lost their business when they stopped buying furs. When they start outlawing neutral, which they never should have done to start with. You can't imagine the taste of neutral. Could you?
I don't think I've ever tried it.
How'd you eat it?
Do you ever eat anything that you never could taste what it was?
What do you mean that I couldn't taste? It didn't have a flavor to it? No,
it had no flavor.
Do I try new things? It had no flavor?
It had no flavor. Did you ever try something, I'm saying, that you cannot eat, that you can't taste? You say, well, what I'm eating this for? What is that? It's a neutral taste, right?
Neutral.
I'm just trying to give you the word.
Yeah.
You take that neutral and you make it, cut it up, take all the bones off of it. You can mix it with, make sausage with it. You mix it with pork. You want to make hamburgers with it, you mix it with beef. And I'm not talking about buying the cheapest beef you can pick up. You buy a hind quarter and match it with that many pounds of neutral. And there's no way in hell, if somebody tells you that that restaurant is selling neutral, that they're selling neutral. All you got to do is look at it. Because if you fry neutral, cooked like I'm talking, fixing like I'm talking about, it's going to be the exact same size as when you put it in on that skillet when it comes out. It will not shrink.
So did your family like to eat nutria?
Oh, yeah. I raised them on nutria. That's how we ate. We ate high on the hog, really. You want to put it that way.
Where would you get your nutria from?
This trapper that I had, a friend, would save me all the legs. I'd give him fish and whatever I was catching, I caught the biggest otter ever caught at Bar Sally. And I gave it to the trapper. And you know what? He gave me $25 for it right off the bat. When he skinned it and stretched it, the buyer came to get it, pick up his furs, and because of that one otter, he raised the price on every one of his furs. On every one of them, because of that one otter. You know what he did? He come back and give me some more money. I don't remember exactly how much, but he come give me some more money. He said, I'll take any amount you bring like that. He said, well, I ain't got no use for it. And I caught a lot of otter in my nets that I had to throw away.
You caught him in the hoop net?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well, they go in there to eat.
Oh, they go to steal your fish?
Yeah. They ain't going to get out, though.
And the otter fur is prized?
But that otter was dead, but he had just died. Because I knew how long that net had been in the water right there.
What about alligators? Did they get in your net?
Yep. That ain't the worst one, though.
What's the worst?
I caught a goldfish the length of that net. That big around. And he was dead. And you talk about a job to get out.
Was he rotten?
That was a job to get out of there. He was floating. That's a nasty job, that part. That's not the fun part.
So you ate a lot of nutria at your house?
Oh, yes. I'd eat it right now if they had it. But they done ruined the trapping business. Wildlife and fisheries were just outlawing this stuff, done ruined the trapping business. There's no more trappers.
What about garfish? Did you fish garfish?
No, I fished garfish just when they went in the nets. I mean, and I fished them on a hook now and then. I caught one day on a rod and reel, went 65 pounds. Now, it's fun to catch, but most people would throw it away, because I'd skin it, me. Best garfish I ever had, I wanted to throw it away. It was so full of blood. I mean, it was blood. I mean, solid blood. I said, that fish ain't gonna be no good. And I cleaned it and cut it out, and I washed it, and I cooked it. That was the best fish I ever ate.
How do you cook garfish?
Any kind of way you want. Anything you want. And even eel is good.
Tell me about that. Did you catch eels?
Oh, yeah, them big fish eels. I caught about four of them one day that about this long in a crab trap. And I went home and I skinned them. See, I'm going to try something. I skinned them down. I always brought fish to the plant. I cleaned them up, cut them in rings. Come out like a dollar or a quarter in rings. And I fried that up, and boy, I had a big old plate, fell out of them. I brought them to that lab. Told them if they want some fish, they got some in the bag. And a man turned that down, and then a man stopped eating till that pan was dry. Do you think they were good? I even tasted one of it. But that's a fish eel now. That's not this black eel, that's a green eel. It's about that long.
Do you cook?
Huh?
Do you cook?
Oh yeah.
You a good cook?
I say I am. Because I can eat what I cook.
Did you cook at home?
Yeah.
Your family?
I cook sometimes. I used to cook more than I cook now.
What'd you like to cook? What was your favorite?
Oh, we used to eat a lot of duck spaghettis and rabbit spaghetti and gumbos, stuff like that. And fried fish.
How did you, so you hunted also for rabbits and ducks, those things?
Yep. Yeah, that's a thing of the past.
How would you rabbit hunt? Did you use dogs?
We had dogs. I had a friend of mine had some dogs. And we hunted with dogs. We didn't hunt with fire, but one time we hunted. If somebody set a marsh on fire back there, it wasn't here. It was in on the other side of Morgan City, the pension. And we'd gone there with another fella. And we'd kill a few rabbits in front of the dogs in all that grass, but it was hard. And this guy here that we brought us out there, he couldn't shoot anyway. And we went in there, and me and my buddy, we hunted with dogs. We left the dogs in the boat. Well, the dogs didn't like staying in the boat. And they had rabbits all over the place coming out there in fires. So we wound up killing, we had 25 each at the time. That other fella killed three. Shot three boxes of shells. And we wound up with 51. You know how we got that one? Our best dog caught it and killed it and brought it to us. Now, that's over the limit, but that's destroying. They're destroying all the feed, and it's destroying the rabbits that's on fire. There's nothing we could do about the ones that's on fire. And I mean, I think that's terrible when people do that. Not say that we did something terrible when we killed them out, but they didn't have a chance. They was going to cook them right to that body. And you can go out there with a stick and kill them if you want to.
So you make spaghetti and different things with rabbits?
Yeah, we cook mixed stew, rabbit stews and spaghettis. The birds is more for gumbos and stuff. We used to, I cooked a dogri gumbo one time. And that's supposed to be a duck ain't worth a dime. I cut all the breasts off, had 35 of them. Cut the breasts off and I invited a bunch of people to the house. They ate that stuff. They could, I say this is an exotic meal. They couldn't stop till they were finished. They never knew what they ate. People don't know what they eat. And you wouldn't want to see some of the pictures I got from overseas. But if you don't try something, I wouldn't give you anything if I don't eat it myself. If I want, but I might not tell you what you'd eaten at the beginning, but never think I'd give you something without. And one lady one time, we was cooking sausage. And it was Nutri-Sausage. And she said, oh no, I mean, she was very, very finicky. She put on makeup to go to bed. And her name was Melody, you might know her. And she didn't wanna eat sausage. She wasn't gonna eat that. She was at my cousin's house. Well, we had a big cookout, us. And well, she said, that sure looks good. She said, well, we finally convinced her to go ahead and try a piece. We gave her a piece of that sausage. She said, I don't never eat nothing like this. She said, but I ain't never ate this. She said, when you gonna get some more? Where you bought this at? I made this, ma'am. I made it myself. Well, when you gonna make some more? She ate three pieces of that sausage. And she's a little bitty woman. And that's all she did was bragged about it. That's where your brain is not functioning. You don't want to taste something because you're scared that it ain't no good. My father-in-law was the same way. He would get sick if he went to the barroom and they told him that he was eating a Nutri-Gumbo. He would get sick. But he'd sit at my table at home and fried frogs for them people. He ain't never seen nothing like that. He never seen nothing when I brought, till I brought 20-something sacks of crawfish over there. And told him, I said, I got y'all a couple of sacks of crawfish on in the truck. That's when they shut me down on July 20th. The dock shut me down fishing crawfish. His friend of mine was the one in running the dock. He said, you're the last man I bought from. He said, I held on as long as I could. He said, I'm going to have to ask you to pick up your traps. We're going to buy whatever you catch. He said, but your crawfish just started dying when they got to Texas. And that was in July. I remember the exact date. That was the 19th of July he called me. He said, you can pick your traps up. And he said, I'll buy them. I said, well, instead of that black, I said, I'll tell you what I'll do with you. I said, can I get a load of ice to put in my truck? He said, that's all you want. I said, if you want a sack of crawfish for it, fine. I said, I'm going to bring them crawfish to New Orleans. And I didn't use onion sacks. I never told you all that. I used peach sacks, big potato sacks. When I put your sack of crawfish down, you better be able to carry it. No women could carry them. I'll find that those sacks holds moisture and would keep your crawfish alive longer.
And what kind of sack was it again?
Just potato sacks.
It was bigger.
Just regular potato sacks.
Was it burlap or plastic weave?
Yeah, the burlap sacks. Okay. Now, they got one other sack that's better, but you don't want to buy those. That's just hand-knitted nylons. If you want a sack of crawfish for yourself, you put them in there. They got air holes in those.
When you went fishing and you were out doing that kind of work, that was a joy for you?
Yes. I enjoyed that more than anything else.
What did you like about it?
The peacefulness of the swamps. When the swamps talk to you, it's a different thing. You don't have to worry about somebody running into you in a car or something. If they're in that section you're in, you can get away from them in a hurry. Like, I had one game warden so stupid that he was running down, which he had to know was a dead-end canal. If he's chasing somebody in a dead-end canal, he don't have to run this big motor and this big boat wide open down the bayou. He cut up three of my nets, and after I caught him back there, I said, what the hell are you looking for? I said, this bar goes to a dead end. You ain't chasing nobody. You just boat riding. Because you couldn't find nobody that was illegal.
So you like being
out? I mean, you don't do that if you're a game warden. If you're going to go in that bar, you go find out first if it goes to a dead end. Because if you don't, you know, you're wasting your time.
How much time did you spend on the water every week?
Oh, ma'am, that's hard to say. That's hard to say. I had to raise nets 2 to 3 times a week. Crabs and crawfish traps, stuff like that, that was every other day or so. I mean, all the time. And depending on the orders. When they was building that bridge at Bayou Sally, you know where the bridge is at. That crew was knocking off, and I knew they were knocking off. I had got off that morning from graveyards at 7 o'clock, and I went and I run my crawfish traps. Well, before I got home, I stopped at the store, got my beer naturally, and I drank beer in them days. And I didn't drink any water, though. I might have drank in the truck, but I didn't drink in the water. And I stopped over there and asked them, I said, you guys want some crawfish? But I called my wife first. I said, you got any orders? She says, no. She says, I hadn't got one call for crawfish today. I says, all right, I'm going to stop and see if these fellas want them. And I stopped over there and told them what I wanted a sack from. I wanted $22 a sack from. That's peat sacks. They bought every one of them. 40 sacks. They bought every one of them. So I'm not finished that one. So here I go. I get home. Now, I didn't sleep because I'd worked graveyards the night before. I went out there and I run crawfish traps. Then I go and, well, I park my boat over there on the plant site where I worked at. That was a cabin. I parked over there. I had permission for that. I left the boat there and I come home. I asked the wife, I said, you got any orders for crawfish? She said, I do. She said, how many you brought? I said, none. She said, the school wants 20 sacks this evening at 5 o'clock for a crawfish boil. She said, I thought I could probably you'd catch them. I caught them all right. I turned around and went back. I slept about 2 hours, and I went back over there, hooked onto the boat and hit those same traps again. And I come back with 20 sacks for the school. And they all appreciated it. I had one group of people one time that was having a crawfish boil at one of those colored churches. And he came there and said, we're kind of out of crawfish right now. What you got? I told him. He said, oh, you're a little bit high. I said, yeah. I said, I'm just getting what they're worth. And I said, they're guaranteed. Oh, that's another thing, too. I guaranteed everything. If you find something that wasn't no good in there, you just bring it back. I'll make it good. And that preacher come back about 10 or 15 minutes later. He said, you got any more than crawfish? I said, yeah, I got about 6 more sacks. He said, I want them all. That's how fast they buy them, when they know what you got. I had some come back one day after I done went through them, and they were white crawfish. God done, you can see white crawfish. If you don't want to eat them, don't wash them in salt water. And that's what they pulled. They brought it back. I ain't never sold it. And he's a neighbor of mine. I talked to him yesterday. I never sell him another crawfish the rest of his life. Because now I got a box of crawfish that I got to tend to. Because once you pour that salt water on, forget it. And you can tell in a hurry. And you're not cleaning them with salt water. Anyway.
What's the best way to clean them?
Mm-hmm. Just wash them. What I do, I got a big barrel. And I pour the crawfish in there and I just run water in. When it clears, they clean.
About how long does that take?
Your barrel probably run over for just a little while, but really, that's hard to say. You got to watch the water. The water's going to be dirty at first, then it's going to be cleared. Then you can stir it on there. And you're going to lose a few because they're going to pinch one another. You're going to have a couple of dead ones possibly. But possibly they're still good anyway, if they're fresh. And that's the way you tend to them, though. That's the way I tend to them. And I know one thing. When I had that little, she had that crawfish place across the street from the house, I had people come all the way from Morgan City to buy crawfish from me. and they pass right by crawfish people.
So do you have to buy seafood now? Do you still fish, or you ever have to buy seafood?
Oh, no, I can't get in the boat no more.
Do you ever have to buy seafood, though?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
No, he catches a few shrimp right now and crawfishing, and when he catches some crawfish, they have a boil. I get enough.
Because I was going to ask you, what do you think of most of the seafood out there for sale now? What do you think about the quality compared to what you used to deliver?
I would be very skeptical of who I'm buying from. They got a fella in Delcom that I'd buy from, Jimmy Dupree. I named him the other day.
I know Jimmy.
I would buy from Jesse Higgins if he was still fishing. But Jesse, I don't think he's still fishing. He's a little old, and that's one of the boys took his boat. I know he ain't got rid of the boat, because that's his lifetime. That's his lifeline. Because when that water's going to hit, he's going to have a place to go. You won't have a place, but he will.
But what do you think about the quality of what's out there for sale? Do you think you think something's been lost, or you think there's still good seafood out there to buy?
There should still be, but it ain't going to last any much longer. Without these marshes, it's not going to be there.
Tell me about some of the changes you've seen in the marsh in your lifetime. What's a marsh like now as compared to when you were a boy or
everybody condemns the oil fields and the pipelines and stuff like that. Well, to have those pipelines and oil fields, you got to dig cuts. I made the best years of my life in oil fields, in the pipeline canals. That's all filled up right now. It's all silted up. You can't run pipeline canals no more. I couldn't 6 years ago. You can't even get in them back canals. They done silted up something terrible. I don't even know if I could ever get back to where I was at one time. And I ain't been there since I was 57. That's when I got out of the marshes, and I never been back. That's when I had that appendix that just about killed me. I never been able to lift again.
So around here, you've seen marsh built up? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, all these marshes that filled up. They filled up with mud, silt. That's happening everywhere. What you going to do with that water that's filling up the intercoastal canal? What you going to do with that water that's what I'm trying to say, Don. Calumet Cut. Mm-hmm. Calumet Cut used to be 90 feet deep at the mouth. Mm-hmm. I could not get out the Calumet Cut the last time I went in a northerner. I crossed out of Hog Bar and went across there and got almost at the mill. I had to turn off the salt mine, and I had to turn in. That's where my traps were at. I went in there and I started running my traps. Well, the traps started passing me up. I said, "Well, what's going on?" I had my grandson with me. I said, "I don't see what's going on here. I guess the tide's rolling too fast." So I turned around. I said, "Just get out of here, would you?" I couldn't get back to that bayou. No way could I get back to that bar to get to that salt mine.
Because of the wind?
No, not in that boat. I couldn't get there. So I took off to the bay. I figured I was going to go outside. I almost didn't get outside. I had hell getting off of them flats. I had hell passing my crab traps up. And I went out there, and I said, "Well, okay, we got into a little bit water now." I got on the step. When I got on the step, I said, "Okay, we're gone. I'll go in the other end into the Calumet Cut." Well, they got pipe over there that shows the channel. I rounded that point. When I rounded that to go through them pipe, I hit the bottom. There was no water. I turned back out, and if one thing saved us, well, there's two things. I could have still got to Barnes Point. I know all the back buyers back there. I knew every one of them. I went to the nearest one they had that was open. I knew that one was going to be open because them crew boats go in there all the time. That's the Texaco pipeline line canal. You turn right in it, and you go to Hogwild, and you turn right, and you turn left, and you go through that swamp, and you go all the way back. And I got all the way back home through there without no problems. But I could not run the Calumet Cut. You know what caused that? Corps engineers. You know when it was caused? You got any idea? When they built that dam over there on Six Mile Lake. And they kill that part of the lake. I said it the day it was built, the day they said they was gonna build it. I said that's it for us for our duck hunting. I said they're gonna be 20-foot willow trees in that thing in the first 2 years. I didn't miss it by maybe 6 months.
What were they trying to accomplish building that? What were they trying to do?
I have no idea what those idiots was trying to do. The only thing I can see, they was trying to hold all the water in the Atchafalaya River to keep it to go to Morgan City. And what you want to do that for when you got a 4.6 water in the Atchafalaya at Morgan City right now, and that can go through underneath the seawall that's built over there. Why did you build Avoca Island locks? Why build it if you're going to do that to it? You got to close it if that channel is too high. Why do it? Why do this? And then the backup water takes care of the other side of the lake. It goes through Lake Pelor, however you pronounce that, and Stevensonville. All that goes underwater if you're going to back it all up. All the way into all them other little towns back there.
Did your daughters ever go out in the boat with you?
Oh yes.
They enjoyed that?
Mm-hmm. My kids came with me shrimping a lot of times. Except that one over there. She'd come down there.
And your wife, she enjoyed...
My wife was the best fisherman I had on the boat when you took her fishing with a rod and reel. Okay. She set a record in this rodeo over here, that Sycamore Point, the one they just set on. Yeah. She had caught this croaker here that went over 3 pounds. And she was in the books for a long time till they started coming in with them fish from Grand Isle. And that's when I quit even going to the rodeo. But she caught more fish. She hooked one of them big drum one time. I kind of felt sorry for her. But I let her fight it in.
Now, so fishing wasn't your only job. Where did you work? What was your other job?
Oh, I worked for the state of Louisiana on highways. I built a bunch of these highways in through here. I was a inspector. I did the testing and stuff on any material coming in and how they packed it, putting it in. I was in charge of all of that, on most of it. I built that swamp job over there. They were just punishing me on that.
How many years so you worked for Department of Transportation Development or DOTD?
Engineering department.
How long?
12 and a half years. And I ain't never missed a 40-hour work week. And what I'm saying that is, I mean, I was covered like with sick leave or something like that. I quit on a Tuesday and went to work for Cabot Corporation on a Wednesday. And when I went to work Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, and I asked the foreman if I could make my 40 hours. He gave me Saturday and Sunday. And that was on the 10th of September. And by December, I was through paying out all of Social Security. I had made that much money. I never turned down an hour of overtime. Unless I was sick. And that's the truth right there. That's 100, that's all 40 hour work weeks. I never missed.
If you had it to do all over again,
I'd do it.
You'd do just what you did.
I'd do it. Other than working for the state of Louisiana, I might do something else. But my dad, right here, I mean, I can talk about my dad, worked with the Corps of Engineers. He worked the bridge at Bar Buff. He worked on that. He built this bridge in Lake Charles, the one with the pistol handles on it. I may have told you that. He was on the Avoca Island locks job for one of the richest 10 men in the country. And he built that when the other superintendent dropped that load of cement in the bayou. He gave him the job as a superintendent. And he finished that job for them. I worked over there during the summer. I'm getting mixed up on what years those was. But anyway, I worked over there during the summer. And that man right there that you see, he was called to go to, by the federal government. He was called in for a meeting. And they wanted to send him a plane ticket. My daddy don't fly. He won't fly. He said, "You think you can be able to take me to Birmingham, Alabama?" I said, "Well, me and the wife is fixing to get married. I mean, we was engaged." I said, "Yeah, well, we'll go take a ride with you, Dad." I had to leave the job I was on. I was working for T.L. James during the summer. And they didn't want me to leave either. And I took him over there. And he went to his meeting. He come back, I said, "What do they want, Dad?" He said they wanted me to go build the first nuclear plant in the United States in Paducah, Kentucky. I said, "Well, I turned them down flat." He said, "What I'm hoping to get is the bridge across Lake Pontchartrain." But he didn't. They missed the bid on that. But had he taken that job, and we had gone with him, which I wouldn't have done, I would probably be way up the ladder now. I don't regret it, though. I still like the state we're living in, but I'm afraid for the next generations to come.
Why?
They just think they see flood water right now. They just think that. They still got... I'll tell you another little story about the Gulf of Mexico, if you want to hear it. You ever been to, let me see, the crater in Arizona?
Yep.
Huh? You been there? Mm-hmm. You ever read the documentations?
No.
Next time you go there, read the documentations, because it's all documented. Do you know how big it is?
No.
You've ever been to the crater? Would you be ashamed if I would tell you how big you would look at the bottom of it? About the size of an ant. You wouldn't even know that was you. That's like being 10,000 feet on top of a mountain and looking down and seeing them cars coming. See, well, what is that coming? You can't even tell it's a car. That's Lake Tahoe. Now, what it is, the crater was the second hit by a comet. In the documentations, you know what the first was? The biggest comet that's ever hit the United States? Gulf of Mexico. He's been to the crater, so he knows what I'm saying. You can see both sides of where the crater starts and ends. You cannot see both sides where the Gulf of Mexico starts and ends. I believe when that comet hit the Gulf of Mexico, it formed Cuba, it formed the peninsula, and it left gaps in it. And it formed all them little islands that's out there. I think it even formed the Bermuda Triangle. There's something under the Bermuda Triangle that causes these problems. Now, they said in the documentation, now this was 15 years, 20 years ago that I went there, that the Gulf of Mexico done came up. The bottom has risen 100 feet back then. How much you think it is right now? How much siltation you think is in the Gulf of Mexico? There's enough siltation in the Gulf of Mexico right now to create the biggest storms you're going to ever see. The shallower the water, the bigger the waves, baby. That's the truth. When Audrey hit, that tidal wave came through Cameron. It wiped out Cameron. In fact, when I talked to you about when I stayed in Cameron, the first people that was on there was the ones we rented from over there that died. Which that's where I had that attack of asthma and I sat by that stove. If you get this gulf shallower, you're going to have more water coming. Because you're not going to stop the mountains. You're not going to stop up there. That's going to keep coming from now on, forever, till that mountain's gone. Who realizes that? I don't think none of our politicians realize that at all. I think all they want to do is go out and party and have a good time. You can read it in the paper every day if you want to. They're spending money to go see something and they're staying in high-class motels. Who's paying for that? Taxpayers.
That's going to probably always be like that. What would you like to tell people who may see this video of you in 20 years? What was the best part of all of living down in this part of the country for you?
The best part of living down here? Well, I had free access to all of the seafood I wanted to help out myself, feed my family. I wasn't making no money. You're talking about slave labor. I made $145 a month. No overtime, even though I worked 7 days a week. I didn't get paid overtime by the state or nobody. Now, I was able to take off the time, which I didn't lose, because I had so much of it, I did lose some. When I quit, I was able to draw that out as money. But we didn't make overtime at all. We worked 7 days a week and didn't make a nickel more. That's hard to raise a family like that.
So without...
I'd tell you a lot of stuff that might have been a little bit out of focus, but I'm not going to mention it. But right now, I know what food stamps is doing to us. And I know how you can kill it.
The so fishing for you and living off the land was really necessary.
Oh yes, and everything I sold or caught, I still had bills to pay with it. I still could use that as deductions. I could on my income taxes. Yeah, I never did. It never took that away from me. And I always did that.
Do you have any more wrap-up questions?
No, I think that's about it. We covered a lot of ground. Thank you very
now
much.
Now, you want to know something about the crabs on them marsh steaks?
Sure.
Them crabs, them little crabs will go up there. You want to know the other day where the crabs grow.
Yeah.
They go up on them steaks, them that come up.
Oh, the marsh
they
crab.
Feed them on that. I got a... Okay, that's a crab. Now, when they feed on that, then they start growing. Now, they start getting that big. All right, you're getting a crawfish trap, they kill crawfish. That's, and then they stay in the bayous as long as they got water. They're going to stay in them bayous because they got feed there. That's why these people don't know that. That's why I could fish in. And if they found my traps, I'd cut the ropes off. I can take a trap and throw it overboard with nothing on it and go back and pick it up. I could find it. And I never fish like some of these other fishermen. They fish with one pin down and one pin and then they pull them up and put it out again. I didn't do that. I put one stop down tight, one stop down on this end, one line across it. I had two loops in it. I hooked the net on both ends, stretched it, dropped it overboard, had a line on the top to hold it straight. When I caught it in a grab, I just picked it up, rolled it in the boat with the, and opened up the gates for them to come out. It's fun. I done that to an MIT graduate. He come wanted to go with me fishing. Mm-hmm. And I threw that grab in that net, and I knew when I put my hand on it, I knew they had fish in it. I mean, I might have not known what kind, what size, but I knew they had fish in it. And he wanted to pick it up. He wanted to do this and do that with it. I got on the front deck. And I let him pick it up. When they had about six goujons in there, and big ones. When they come up, them goujons went to swinging that tail, they drowned him in that boat. You should have seen it. That was a comedy. That was a comedy. You put out a gill net for me, and he was hanging on the pole, pushing it out, and he was out in the water. What I do now? I say, if you want to, you can slide down the pole and walk back to the boat. But some of these smart people just not as smart as they think they are.
Do you have to be pretty smart to be a good fisherman?
Right. I don't know if I gave you enough dope so that you can get that locks built at the Delcom, but if that's not done and that intercoastal canal is not closed off with all them, you ain't got nothing. You have nothing left here.
I know you're about to roast. I think we're
done. Yeah, we're done.
Yeah, we're
I think we're good.
You crank it back up and kill yourself.
Sorry.
Boy, y'all ain't got too hot.
Well, I know it's well, we...
It's summertime and she's cooking. I hate to do that to y'all, but the machines didn't pick it up,
yeah,
so...
Thank you.